Look, the knowledge that we have about COVID is that it thrives in small spaces. How can football be super spreaders?
Big questions, even bigger guests. This is The Big Interview.
Good day and welcome to the SL Podcast. It's now been a year since we entered into lockdown in response to the COVID-19 pandemic. It's been a long and hard year in which we had to adapt to the new normal. And so we saw it fitting to invite South African Football Players Union President Thulaganyo Gaushubelwe to the show to discuss the PSL's response to the COVID crisis, how the players have managed over the past year, as well as other issues impacting football, such as the Black Lives Matter movement, equal pay for women, and more. I'm your host, Slu, and this is The Big Interview. I'm happy to be joined on the line by the president of the South African Football Players Union, Thulaganyo Gaushubelwe. How are you doing today, sir?
Slu, we could be better. We are okay. You know, doing everything that we can to stay alive.
So I've seen the South African Football Players Union take a stand against discrimination. You know, there's the Black Lives Matter movement happening on all fronts globally. So how much would you say discrimination still affects local footballers, and what's the importance of this movement to you?
Look, thank you very much, Lou. And I think you're raising a very important part, because I think discrimination affects us differently. A black man in the U.S. sometimes is denied an opportunity to practice what they do best, their work and so forth. A footballer in South Africa might not be able to kind of like play or ply their trade and play football, the only gift that they have, simply because there's no access to that. But in our view, part of the discrimination comes when you talk about issues of sponsorship and so forth. Mm. Because sometimes sponsorship discriminates in terms of where they want to put their money. And by so doing, you know, they do not assist in promoting the development of the game and so forth. So it's from a resource point of view, where we would want previously advantaged sponsors and sponsorship, you know, to participate fully when it comes to the previously disadvantaged sports and so forth. So we are not going to be quiet until such things are addressed. We are not going to be quiet when a black person also is discriminated, or women are discriminated from playing football. I mean, one of the things is that in terms of this discrimination, we are trying to move towards the issues of equal pay. Even before we get to the issue of equal pay, Slu, I think one of the fundamental issues is to have issues of better resources for women. Mm. So that whatever happens, they are then able to, you know, play the best possible football that they can under best possible conditions and so forth. So discrimination is in so many ways that we are currently dealing with as an organization.
You raised a very good point about the issue of sponsorship, and we saw the impact of COVID last year. Certain teams lost sponsors, but a question that I have for you is, do you think that there's a bit of a discrepancy between how much football gets sponsors in this country as compared to, say, cricket or rugby? And particularly, you know, the black community supports football the most, but yet cricket and rugby seem to get a lot more attention in terms of sponsorship. Would you agree with that, or is that kind of the perspective you have?
Look, this is very simple in our view, that football, which is a previously disadvantaged sport, they do not get the necessary support that they deserve. Most importantly, because when you go and apply for sponsorship, when let's say you go to all these corporates, who sits in the boardroom? Who makes decisions? What kind of background are these people coming from, Slu? You know, now, if you come to me and you say, I come to you, Slu, and I'm saying, Slu, I'm Thulaganyo. I am from a small community somewhere in Gauteng, and this community wants to play sport and so forth. Can you sponsor? You may not understand what I'm talking about because you are not really exposed to what I've been exposed to. Now, when you go, until such a time that we are able to change these institutions as well and participate fully, and to a larger extent, get government intervention in terms of making the, you know, leveling the playing fields for us, such that, you know, the issues of sponsorship, we should not be struggling really when it comes to issue of sponsorship. When people come and invest, there should be a particular tax, which is something that we really need to sit and talk to at some point. But having said that, we strongly believe that those who are making decisions are the ones, you know, who would decide, you know, that, and those who decide that sponsor A must go to cricket, sponsor A must go to sports, they really need to be transformed as well. And we need to participate in those structures. We need to be part and parcel of that. Only then will we be able to get what's rightfully ours, you know, in terms of sponsorship and so forth. Yes, I can say without any fear that, yes, indeed, we are being disadvantaged, football in particular, women football at most, you know, they've been disadvantaged when it comes to the issues of sponsorship and so forth. Now, you find us fighting for crumbs to say, okay, there is this little. How many, when you look at maybe franchises at the rugby level or cricket level, you'll understand that and you'll get to realize that just one franchise sponsorship, it's bigger than or not even closer to whatever you'll be getting in terms of football collectively. So that cannot be the thing and be addressed. And one of the things that we are, of course, also talking to, which, you know, creates a bit of a problem, is that how do you then balance that, which in terms of sponsorship by televising games and so forth, but at the same time, ensuring that you are not going to hurt the players in their pockets. Because when you take the rights of the clubs as well, or the league, to negotiate with the other sponsors, and it becomes a bit of a challenge, you know, in ensuring that we have all those resources and so forth. So we're hoping that issue of sponsorship must be open for discussion. It must be debated. There must be a blueprint in terms of what needs to happen, so that we know that this is what needs to do, and this is what we need to do. Also, who are we targeting in terms of addressing all these fundamental issues? Because without any capital injection, any resources, we are just dreaming. It's a pipe dream.
Now, you mentioned women's football in particular. And when you see Banyana Banyana Stars making it big in Europe and local women's leagues getting more attention, are you optimistic about the future of the women's game locally? Do you think there should be more eyes on these leagues, and that there should be more TV spots given to these stars? Because, I mean, from Milan to the Spanish La Liga Women's League, you know, these women are making a big, big impact for their clubs. But it doesn't seem to be getting enough traction. Are you still optimistic about the future of the women's game?
Look, we are very, very optimistic about the future of the women's game. We believe that there's a whole lot of good that's coming our way. And I think I'm saying this not because I'm sucking what I'm saying, but on the basis that we've been part and parcel of the discussions at the level of FIFPro with FIFA, you know, when it comes to women football, especially on the continent, as to how do we formalize. We now know that there are monies that would come from FIFA, you know, coming to the association, and that money specifically would be intended for women development. We need to sit down and tap into that space to say, once we do not have other resources, but with the little resource that we have, what is it that we need to do? We were very happy when the league started about a year ago, until, you know, COVID stopped everything. But we are still engaging in those discussions to say, we want to see football being better. Instead of having 12 streams, how do we then enhance all the opportunities so that your girl child, my boy child, somebody's girl child, somebody's boy child, they grow up together and knowing that they can do what God gave them, you know, without necessarily the other being disadvantaged simply because of issues of resources. We're hopeful that this thing will happen. And one of the fundamental issues, of course, that we're doing is to organize women as well, so that they are able to have that voice. You know, they are able to stand together and say, no, enough is enough. These are the things that we need to be done. We cannot have a situation of women struggling in a country where we've agreed that There must be 50-50 in terms of representation. There must be ILO, the International Labour Organization, had said we must push towards, you know, equal pay and all that. And yet women, you know, our mothers, our sisters, our gogos, they still, you know, getting far below what is acceptable in terms of that. So we're hopeful and we'll continue pushing this better. And we're hoping that with the with Cap and the new incumbent, or with the incumbent or the new president, would then be able to take us to where we want. We are engaging, of course, as well. I mean, from the level of FIFA on the continent, which one is a member, is a member of the board. We are doing everything in our power to engage. We've engaged with the previous administration, or the current administration would be outgone come the 12th of March. But there's been a lot of inroads in terms of what needs to happen. How do we empower women? How do we ensure that football is played better on the continent and so forth, so that everybody else is then able to give the God-given talent? So we are very hopeful, and we're hoping that whoever will be coming through, they will, at the center of their dream and at the center of their manifesto in football, would be the stakeholders themselves, the main stakeholders, the key stakeholders, the players and so forth. So that it's all about that we develop the players, we develop the game, such that it favors those that make it to be what it is today.
Now, I have to ask you lastly about, one, the COVID crisis and its impact on players, and also the issues we saw with player salaries not being paid a couple months ago earlier in the season, which you guys helped to mitigate in a way. So firstly, with the COVID crisis, how do you think the PSL has handled the situation now that we're a year removed from lockdown starting? And two, in terms of the players in the league, how much has COVID and the scheduling impacted players, particularly around, you know, situations like the Kaizer Chiefs, we died debacle, and travel and fitness being affected? So one, how has the PSL handled the situation? And two, how are the players holding up?
Look, I think credit must be given away, Stu. I mean, the league, firstly, when this thing started, I think some time back in March 2019, last year March, we held a meeting with the league. I mean, as a key stakeholder, we sat down, we expressed our views, because we're dealing with issues of protocol, to say what is it that needs to happen, what can be done, what should be done. And indeed, we found each other, we agreed, and we were party to all those discussions. And credit to the league to say, indeed, under difficult circumstances, they managed at least to stick to minimum basics that we would have agreed on. Importantly, the sponsorship, which is DSTV, did not cancel the grant, which, you know, assisted the players. However, it must be said that there would have been those clubs that wanted, of course, to cut the player salaries, others cut the player salaries. But upon us engaging with them, they then changed and they understood that, yes, we do understand that there's a problem here. However, we also understand that the DSTV and so forth, they have not really cut the salaries. But there was pretty much issues of having to have a dialogue and talk about issues, sometimes very difficult issues. But we had to be honest with ourselves, honest with the clubs, honest with the players in terms of what we need to go. And we can at least say that we've weathered that particular storm to a larger extent. We don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. I mean, you would know that, I mean, just the other day, Vit was sold. There was an issue with TTM. TTM got sold, you know, because of all those financial issues and stuff and all that. And we're hoping, but in the big scheme of things, that everything else would be okay and the players, you know, would be the beneficiaries as it were. But to the extent that players are affected, SAF will always be there, pronounce and represent the interests of the players, and try and find a lasting solution for our football, because we are not against anybody, but we are for the rights of the players, and we are for the development of football in this country. And we believe that together, we've got a role to play, and we can make a huge difference, whether there's a pandemic or no pandemic. As long as parties and stakeholders come sit down and talk and be true to their word, we'll be able to find each other.
And lastly, I'm not sure how much information you would have on this. It's obviously up to the Ministry of Sports, but what's your outlook on in terms of now we're back to level one, but we still can't go to stadiums. Do you think that there's an opportunity still for the country to do what maybe the UK did and have limited seating available? Have there been those conversations? Because obviously we still haven't seen fans back in stadiums since last year. So what's your outlook on that, even if you don't have outside information?
Look, the knowledge that we have about COVID is that it thrives in small spaces where there's a lack of proper ventilation and so forth. And you know that they say when you're in a small space, we know that it's really amazing that you'd have clubs and everybody. It's good for those people to work because, you know, the impact, if they do not work, it impacts their livelihood and the economy. But equally so, we believe that supporters can be allowed to go to the stadium. The stadium is too big. You can agree in terms of the numbers. You can, of course, keep your own distance in terms of here is a distance and so forth. The model in the UK, you can see that it works very well. We must not create, you know, exception that says a football is a spreader, you know, is a huge spread, because that's what the unfortunate consequences are, or, you know, what is being insinuated in the main to say, no, footballers are super spreaders. How can football be super spreaders when they have got a space for them to sit on the left, to have enough space in between themselves, as opposed to when you are seated in an enclosed environment and so forth. And we are pushing for that, of course. We've been in touch with the supporters of South Africa to say, how can we help? How do we raise that? You know, because we think that football, you know, is football with its supporters and so forth. And we should start moving towards normalcy in relation to players going back to, supporters going back to the stadium and so forth. So our view is very simple. We believe that supporter must be allowed. It must be a limited number, a manageable number, and see how best we can deal with all other issues, because all sectors of the economy have opened. Those magogo that sells, and they must go there. The players must then be able to have the necessary support that they receive as well.
Well, thank you very much for joining me for the big interview. SAFPU President Thulaganyo Gaushubelwe, have a fantastic day further, sir.
Thank you so much.
The big interview is a team effort driven by the following individuals at the SL Podcast. It is hosted and produced by Slu Paho. It is edited by Aiden Hewitt, with graphics provided by Nino Segale. Brought to you by Sokola Duma.